Because what Christians have been accused of for a long time is that religion stops math advancement. It stops science. And what I'm here to say is that is a lie. The exact opposite is true. Atheism stops scientific discovery.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Salty Pastor Podcast, a podcast dedicated to helping you grow in your faith. And the only way you can do that is to learn to think for yourself. You have to know what you believe and why you believe it. And the only way you can really discover that is by having deep, intense conversations, really thinking through what you are believing about yourself and the world around you, and ultimately also kind of looking at how you think about things, because that could drastically change the way that you are making decisions. My name is Jesse Mayer. I'll be your host, but we cannot do this without the one, the only, the salty pastor himself, Dr. Douglas Peak.
Hey, everybody. So good to be with you today. I'm so glad that you're joining us in this series that I personally am enjoying immensely, because it really helps you think more clearly and it helps you understand that, wow, I mean, there's been a lot of really deep thinkers that have answered some really big and important questions in very strong, rational, logical ways. And what that does is that helps me realize that my faith is something that is more, you know, it's got a real depth to it. It's got a real strength to it. It's built on a solid, rational, and logical foundation. And so that's one of the things I like about it. If you have friends or people that have questions about whether or not they can believe in God, share these episodes with them. It's easy. With that in mind, help the ministry grow. You can go over to our YouTube channel, like and subscribe. Our subscriptions have been growing there. We're excited about that. Also, if you want to give and support this ministry as it grows, we'd love to have you do that. You can go to foothills.org. On the far right hand, there's a tab called Give. You click on that, and then you can give directly to the Salty Pastor. It'll ask, you know, where you want it to go, and you kind of pull down that little menu and pick Salty Pastor. So thank you so much for those of you who are supporting this ministry and supporting this. I sometimes feel like we're a voice crying in the wilderness, but hey, we're talking about things a lot of people aren't talking about. But I also believe what we're doing is we're talking about upstream ideas, and that is that this is where you change the current of culture. Is you talk about these deeper things, and in the same vein, when you settle these things in your own mind and your own heart, it changes the current of your faith and your lifestyle.
Yeah, I was actually just talking with a good buddy earlier today, and he was talking with a spouse of his, and they said, hey, can we ever change this? Like, the way the world is going today, is there any way to change it? And it's like, no, not the way you think. Right. Not the way of like, well, we just got to go fight all these little battles in our city halls and downstream ideas, right? Mm-hmm. But you've been talking since we did the upstream series way back when. I don't even know how long. It's all about changing those upstream ideas, changing definitions, changing all of these things so that you're now thinking in a completely different way. And that's what's going to change how you're living your life. That's what's going to change how culture is going. That's what's going to change the seems like trajectory that we are stuck on right now, right?
Yeah, and core values, core beliefs, core principles make all the difference in the world.
And so we're currently in our series talking about proofs of God. And this week is a little heady one, talking about the applicability of mathematics. But after a conversation with you and Jake after our last podcast, I have renamed it in my brain, Why Math Applies to Everything.
Because math applies to everything.
Math applies to everything, right? And we're talking about how everything in the world adheres to math. It is true universally, and it doesn't change. If God doesn't exist, I'm just going to kind of work through the proofs so that we can remind those who haven't listened to the podcast five times since Tuesday what it was about. And part one, or what is it?
Premise one
is, if God does not exist, then the applicability of mathematics is just a coincidence. Mm-hmm. So naturalists and scientific materialists state that the universe is mathematical just because it coincidentally happens to line up, right?
It just happened to be that
Oops. Premise two is, the applicability of math is not a coincidence. Theists state this is the way God designed it, like an architect. He put these rules in place and everything's falling in line like an architect would design, right? Mm-hmm. So premise three is, therefore, God exists. Mm-hmm. So talk to us a little bit more about this, because I think we finally kind of, I finally, by the end of Tuesday's podcast, was starting to finally kind of grasp what you were talking about with math just applies to everything, and it's not a coincidence. Therefore, somebody had to have designed it, and that person really is only God, right? Like,
yeah, I think, you know, you have to look at it this way, and that is, why is every relationship, why is every interaction in the world in which you live, which is cause and effect, why can it be represented by a mathematical equation? Why is that?
I've never thought of my relationship in a mathematical format, but sure.
Yeah, but it can. I mean, you know, it, how things interact in a material universe, you can say the only thing that it, you can't predict mathematically is what people think and do.
Right, what they choose.
What they choose.
Yeah.
But, like, for instance, how tall is a tree going to grow? Of this certain genus, right?
Right.
When that rock falls, how far will it roll? If you have a train, how much horsepower do you need to get it going 60 miles per hour? All of this is represented by math, right? Isaac Newton, he was sitting there, he was watching an apple fell from a tree and hit the ground. He goes, well, why did it do that?
Mm.
Why didn't it fall up or fall sideways? And that's how he discovered, in essence, gravity. But more importantly, he represented it by a mathematical equation.
Right.
So your point is math applies to everything. And I was talking to my oldest son, Zach, who's a math guy. And he's like, well, basically, it means all interactions can be represented mathematically. So, oh, okay. Well, that's novel to think about. But then go a next step further and think of math as a language.
Okay.
Right? So, in essence, math doesn't actually exist. And this is what's really interesting. In the physical world, language doesn't exist. Now, people are going to go, what in the world are you talking about, Pastor? Well, let me explain it this way, is that right now, the reason you can understand what I am saying is because your brain has been trained to recognize abstract verbal symbols with reality. So your brain is doing what? It's taking these verbal signals.
It's converting signals
into an image in the brain.
Right.
This is why when you go to Portugal and they start talking, you don't associate anything with what they're saying.
Right.
Why? Because you don't speak Portuguese. So in essence, all you hear, if you don't speak Portuguese and you've never heard it before, when people start speaking Portuguese, what do you actually hear? Gibberish.
Right.
Right? It's just a bunch of verbal symbols that mean nothing. So where does the meaning come from? It comes from your brain associating, right, a reality with an abstract verbal symbol. Does that make sense?
Right.
The term for this is called language is phenomenological, all right? And so what happens is math is the language of the natural universe. And so math, in essence, doesn't really exist except for the fact that math applies to everything and explains everything in an extremely ordered way. So you can start figuring out all this stuff that you don't even know about your own universe simply by using math. Mm. The best illustration of this is the guy who studied radio waves. You know, when they study that. Or Madame Curie, who discovered radiation. No, nobody can see it. You can't smell it. You can't, initially, you couldn't even measure it. Nobody even knew it existed. But math told them that it did. Isn't that interesting? Okay?
Right.
And so what happened is, and the way it told them, for instance, like with radio waves, what happened is they could see waves in the ocean. They could see, they started to see how waves of sound, the Doppler effect, would work. And so you start thinking, okay, mathematically, how do you represent these relationships of sound waves in various types of waves? And then what happens is you go, well, the math says that if this represents these waves this way, then there must be waves like this that are there as well. And then they go, okay, let's go see if we can find them. And boom, they're there. It's exactly how they discovered that the Earth had a beginning. Is they said, well, if there was a beginning, then there would be this background radiation, right? And they said, okay, so they built a machine to go measure it. And guess what happened?
They found it. Right.
Right. And then we talked about the Higgs boson. It's why does things have mass? Why do they have a gravitational pull? And they spent billions of dollars, like $50 billion, and it took them 50 years. They built the hadron accelerator, particle accelerator, and they accelerated particles that are so small, smaller than atoms, and they collided them with other particles. And then for the very blink of an eye, right, what happened is they were able to track this thing that no one had ever seen before, and they went, aha, there's a Higgs boson. So that's how math works. Is it, if it's true here, then it's going to be true in areas that we don't even know yet. And that's why math drives discovery and drives exploration. So bottom line is, everybody agrees that the universe is so ordered that everything can be represented by mathematical equations, and mathematical equations are always abstract, just like language. It doesn't actually exist in the material world. We just conceptualize it that way. And this assumption that I'm talking about right now may sound odd to think about, but it's the most powerful thing that drives. When mathematicians cannot solve something mathematically, they consider it a problem that must be solved. They don't see it as, oh, well, that's just the way that, you know, math contradicts itself. No, it drives them crazy, right? There's like 7 math problems, there are hypotheses that have yet to be solved. And what do the smartest mathematicians do all day long? Do they go, oh, you can't solve them because they're unsolvable? Is that what they say? They say, how can we solve these problems? I really want to solve this problem. They think about it. They try. There's actually one that there's a reward out there. If you solve it, you get $1 million or something like that. So believe me, people are motivated. But here's what's so fascinating. This is the point I want to make. If faith doesn't exist and there is no faith and you're simply an atheist that denies faith, what motivation or innovative capacity or creative capacity is there to try to solve those math problems? There is none. Because to you, you would just say, well, why should we solve it? Because it's supposed to be a paradox, because math just works that way.
It's coincidental anyways.
It's coincidental anyway. And so this is what I'm saying here is very important, because what Christians have been accused of for a long time is that religion stops math advancement. It stops science. And what I'm here to say is that is a lie. The exact opposite is true. Atheism stops scientific discovery for 2 reasons. Number one, it robs you of any motivation. Like, why? Who cares? It's meaningless anyway, right? You know? And number two, it's, well, there's no faith, meaning there's no belief that there is an answer.
Right.
But So you see why your faith is rational? Because your faith always looks at a problem, and even though there's no answer to it, even though there's no pieces of the puzzle that fit together, even if there's no rhyme or reason, it seems totally chaotic. Your faith says there is an answer. And that's what drives science. And I showed a video clip on Sunday from Dr. Rosalind Picard, who is just super brilliant. And she was an atheist who's now a follower of Jesus Christ. And what's interesting, she said, at its core, science is driven by a belief that there is a truth to discover. My friends, that is the description of real faith. It is based on what I have experienced, based on the revelation of Scripture, based on what God has done in my life. I have faith that there is an answer to be discovered, whether it is for me personally, my personal life, my own personal growth, or what's going on in society around me, or what's going on in the universe. It's all driven 100% by biblical faith.
Yeah, I think I initially was really skeptical about talking about math, because obviously I'm just not a huge math person. I'm not your oldest son, right? And so he loves math. He loves the concept of math. He loves the discovery of math, right?
Mm-hmm.
I did it to get a passing grade in school and choose not to do it unless I have to in general. But as we start breaking this down, it really is one of the easiest arguments as far as trying to really convince someone, hey, yeah, this wasn't an accident, right? Like, yeah, math just applies to everything. And just like if you were coding a computer, it's the language, it's the software, it's the background that the world is built upon in order to make, yes, sure everything works. Like, you can't just go and type random things into a computer and get Fortnite out of it, right? Like, that right, doesn't work. It, no, has to adhere to specific principles. There has to be a coding language that's already been designed that then gets you that final product.
Yes.
And we are seeing that final product in what we call reality. And God went ahead and pre-programmed all the coding language to allow it to occur, right? And so, mm-hmm, it's such an easy, when you break it down to, and that's oversimplification of it, but when you really break it down, you're like, well, yeah, obviously that makes sense. It's not just math happens to line up most of the time with a lot of the things that are existing in this world, but it's all coincidental. And someday we're just going to like find out that there's a lot of things that don't. And it's like, no, it's helping us discover new things. We talked about a treasure map on Tuesday. It's pointing us towards radio waves. It's pointing us towards the Higgs boson particle. Yeah. We're looking at all these different things, and it's like, well, if, yeah, it's just coincidental, why would it be leading us to new things that we don't know about? Just like in coding, like the code doesn't let you create things that don't exist, yeah, in the code, right? Like, you can't deviate from the language and find,
exactly,
new
and
things.
And have it make any sense. It'd just be chaos.
Right. So I think that is something that's really cool that I'm, yeah, coming around on of like, okay, this was a proof that I wasn't super excited about. And now I'm like, oh, okay, I can get behind this. So,
yeah,
talk to me in the time we have left today. What are some practical implications of this particular proof?
Well, you know, this is where I really try to connect the dots. And Salty Pastor listeners will kind of, we're going to be stretched, but this right here, what this proof points out, is the main battleground for our world today. It really is, in my opinion. It is the seminal argument, the foundational place where all of the things downstream are happening that are becoming so chaotic. We live in a postmodern world, and the postmodern world ultimately rejects any truth if it's considered to be objective. Therefore, they object to math, because math is an objective truth. And this is why you're hearing why even math itself is now under attack. In June, Minneapolis Public Schools approved a $2 million contract for an elementary school math curriculum that would contribute to an understanding of ethnic, racial, and cultural diversity.
What does that mean?
It has nothing to do with math. It's about critical race theory.
Okay.
See, so now math is racist, okay? And they want to use it to propagate critical race theory. There's a study in California. There was a school, well, not a study, but a situation where they hired someone to do the same thing at an elementary school in California. And guess what? 4 years later, none of the kids can do math. I wonder why. You see, it was a total failure. Journalist Brian Flood, he writes the following. At least 39 of America's top 50 most prestigious medical colleges and universities have some form of mandatory student training or coursework on ideas related to critical race theory. And this is according to criticalrace.org. This is a group that monitors critical race theory curricula and training in higher education. And I think it's really important to understand is that math, basic sciences are under attack. And the reason why is because we have told people that there is no absolute truth. And so when you don't believe there's any objective truth or absolute truth, you don't ever try to abide or find or discover. It simply becomes whatever I want to impose on other people. When there is no order, right, there is chaos. What does math tell you as a language? It tells you that there's some, I see something going on. Like Isaac Newton saw an apple fall from the tree. And what math does is math says, I can figure out why it does that. And that's where he came up with his mathematical equation for the gravitational force. Is he started to test it, he refined it, but he realized, oh, I'm seeing a reality happen and I can now describe it. Well, what that does is that pushes us towards objectivity. Postmodernism pushes us towards subjectivity, where what I feel and think is more important than anything else. And that's why you can see such craziness going on. I think postmodernism has contributed immensely to the societal instability that you currently see in America and the inability for people to get along and to say and to be tolerant, because my truth is the most important truth, and that trumps everybody else's truth. And that's a problem.
Yeah, I think, especially as we're heading into an election year, I was meeting with some young men that I'm doing a small group with, and we were talking about just this thing of you, especially going into this election year, are going to hear a lot of people that disagree with you politically. But it could be on any number of terms, right? But we've gotten to a point in our world these days where if you disagree on anything, you basically just say, well, I can never be friends with you. Like, right. There's no, hey, Pastor Doug, I love you. I don't love the choice of how you do your hair sometimes. Therefore, I can never talk to you ever again. Like, that's what we've kind of broken down to. It's usually something slightly more significant than that. But there's things that people have had broken relationships over a lot less, right?
Yeah.
And it's really frustrating that you can't even have a one-on-one conversation saying, hey, I believe this. Hey, I believe this. I now understand you better. And I still love you as a person, but I don't agree with this particular part of you. And we'll choose to disagree on that until we can maybe someday come to an
That's
agreement.
That's called tolerance.
Right. Not the world's version, which has been propagated today, which is tolerance is you have to accept everything I do. Otherwise, you're a bigot. Yeah, you hate me, whatever.
Exactly.
And it's like,
exactly.
No, tolerance is agreeing that we don't agree and still caring about that other person. Like, that's a thing, right?
Yeah,
and so
exactly.
I think learning that skill is the number one way we could start really improving our understanding. But it requires us to change the upstream idea of everything subjective, right?
Correct.
There has to be some objective things that we say, no, that's wrong. No, that gravity exists. Like, you can't jump off of a building and believe that you're immune to gravity. Like, that, I'm sorry, that doesn't work, right? Like, we have to get to that point, and then we have to get to a point where we can have a conversation and not cancel and or just quit talking to people because we disagree with some aspect of what they believe, right? That's not a Christian way of thinking. That's not a Christian way of acting, because the moment you stop loving someone, even though they disagree, you've now basically said, I'm banishing you to hell and I don't care, right? Like, you're choosing to let them go.
Yes.
And we're not called to that, right?
No, I think, you know, there's a lot of examples happening in our society today that describe what you're talking about. And that's the rub. And if you don't have clear thinking, and if you don't understand what your core convictions are, if you don't know what you believe and why you believe it, you tend to be a less tolerant person.
Because you can't stand up to the argument, right?
Yeah, you feel threatened, or you don't know how to say, or people manipulate you. You know, Christians are manipulated all the time in today's world with this simple phrase, well, that's not very loving.
Right.
And, you know, people say that to me as a pastor all the time. You know, it's like, well, you'll do. I mean, this is the biggest thing that I get all the time, is that you should. Okay, they should on me, as Pastor Harv says. They should all over me. And they say, you should do this. And when I say, no, I'm not going to do that, they go, well, that's not very loving. And, you know, when I was a younger pastor,
That would have probably viciously affected you.
Oh, we're supposed to be filled with love and da da da. Now I go, you have no idea what love is. I just respond right back and say, you don't know what love is. You know, and I say, go read Romans 14:9. You know, and they go, well, what does that say? And I say, well, go read it.
You should go learn.
Yeah, go learn something, you know. Read a book. And so I'm getting saltier in my old age. I think that happens with age. You just get saltier because you just understand the manipulations.
Are you yelling at people on your grass yet? Are you yelling at people when they come on your grass
yet? No, you can come on my grass all you want. No. But I do yell at people when they say really stupid things.
Okay.
I can't help myself. But, you know, I think as you get older, you realize the games and manipulations people try to. So how do you avoid all that when you're younger? Is you know what you believe and why you believe it, and then you're not threatened. Or manipulate.
You can have a conversation and go, yeah, I don't believe that. You do, and I hope someday you'll come around, but that doesn't mean that right. I'll never talk to you again.
Yeah, and this is what's really so remarkable, and this is why I love this proof. And I know at first it's like, oh, math, why think about it? But I love your little mini evolution over the last week about this proof, right?
Right.
Like up front, it's like, oh, great, too. I could really get into this.
Right.
And I think I want every Christian to go through that. With this proof in particular, because, you know, you don't have to believe in God to understand math, to appreciate math, to use math to solve problems or discover new things. But if there is no God, you cannot explain why there is math and why math applies to everything, which is kind of weird.
Right.
Number two, you don't have to believe in God to understand that everything in this world is interconnected. But if there's no God, and you cannot explain why it's interconnected. What's the point of it being interconnected? And so the implications of these things get really challenging for us as we go downstream. Like, for instance, the statement, we want to be a country that people can practice their own religion, pursue their own work or business, pursue their own opportunity. I think most people say, okay, that's kind of the American way, right?
Right.
Sounds basically, hey, if you know, freedom of religion, you can come here and practice any religion you want. Okay. However, as historian Douglas Murray from the UK points out, how do you handle freedom of religion when one religion believes it should murder and wipe out another one? If you're trying to be tolerant and accepting, do you accept into your midst a religion that is completely intolerant?
Right.
Right. When our founding fathers came up with the experiment of America, they weren't talking about foreign religions like Islam and Hinduism. They were talking about Roman Catholicism and Protestantism, right?
Right.
And even early on in our early history, we struggled with getting that right. There was persecution against Roman Catholics, right?
Yep.
And other various denominations. But now that's changed to where we have to accept a religion in our midst, give them the freedom to do whatever they want when their express statement is, we want to wipe out and kill all Jewish people.
Right.
Okay. This is where secularism has failed, and it just doesn't work. This is why secularism fails every single time, because there is no rational thinking behind it. And that is that, okay, there are some things the math says can't fit, and that is one of them. It's just sad to see this happening to me. Just yesterday, I saw a video of a Columbia University professor who was Jewish. And when you go to Columbia, you know, Columbia is in New York City, right? So it's not like that, the campus that's, you know, way out in the countryside, you know, with the rolling lawn. You know, they're like high-rise buildings. I mean, it's a really nice campus. They got some open spaces. But to get in, you have to go through security, and you have to basically flash your staff badge, or, you know, they've got those RFID chips in there. He goes up there, and it wouldn't let him in. They revoked his access privileges. Why? Because he's a Jewish professor. To me, this is absolutely and unequivocally shocking. Just recently, the Department of Education Secretary Miguel Cardona said in a statement that he has taken a vow to shut down Grand Canyon University, the largest Christian university in the United States of America. Why? Have they done anything wrong? No. He just wants to shut them down.
Hmm.
I think this is what is so difficult, is that because people don't think clearly, they run into pickles all the time. They don't know how to reconcile their faith with, you know, all the aspects of their faith, right? For instance, people don't know how to reconcile the statement, turn the other cheek. If someone slaps you on the cheek, Jesus says in Matthew chapter 5, 6, 7, something like that, he says, turn to them the other cheek, right? If someone asks you to go to mile, you know, go to.
Right.
And it says, well, you know, you're supposed to protect the widow and the orphan, right? So, okay, I'm called to protect the innocent, and I'm also to turn the other cheek. So if there's somebody there who wants to kill my family, right?
I'm just supposed
a burglar
to let them.
Breaks into right. my... So what do I do, walk up there and offer my cheek?
Right.
See, people, because they don't think clearly, they can't reconcile that, right? A lot of times people can't reconcile our position on feeding Muslims through our food pantry. Here at Foothills, we have a food pantry, one of the largest in the Treasure Valley, and we feed tons and tons of people. Well, there's a group of Muslims in their Muslim garb that come and get food from us, right, so that they can eat. They were brought here and resettled as refugees, I believe from Ethiopia. And sometimes they will go into our clothing closet and get clothes, right? So some people are like, well, Islam is expressed, you know, it wants to eradicate Christianity. And so how can you feed Muslims? You know, how can you do that? I go, well, it's easy because Jesus says to feed those people who are hungry. I don't ask. But at the same time, I can get on a podcast and I can talk about the evil ideology of Islam. I do it all the time, right? Yep. And I point it out. I just say, yeah, so we're not going to. So if those people want to come and they want to get food, we'll feed them. Love to do that. If they want to stand up and they want to propagate that ideology, we will stand in the gap and say, not going to happen. And this is why you're wrong. And we will argue with them. And as long as they're peaceable and they want to argue and say their point, that's fine. We will counter with the truth every single time. But the moment they decide to become violent, that's when we say we're here to protect. We're sheepdogs, and we're not going to tolerate you hurting the innocent. And this is why secularism fails, is because secularism is all about tolerating anything, but then when someone gets violent, they can't do anything about it.
Right.
So the only people that they want to get rid of in the attack are the people who are not the ones causing the violence. Isn't that interesting?
Right. So as we're wrapping up, kind of like solidify this proof and give me this kind of direct connection between.
Connect the dots.
Give me like a short final summary of connecting the dots of math applies to everything. And this is why society's math, jacked up.
Yeah. Math applies to everything. And there's proof that there is a God. And so what happens when we deny the conclusion that there is a God, even though it's the best explanation for the fact that math always works? Well, we end up with the irrational thinking. Everything you're seeing right now is irrational, right? When you see the president of Columbia University, right, saying to let's lock out our Jewish professors so that homicidal maniacs can threaten to kill them. That's not civilized society. That's nuts. And she's nuts. And this is absolutely crazy, irrational thinking. People who not only believe that things are irrational or think irrationally, they begin to push and propagate things that are absolutely irrational as well. Oh, you were born a male and you don't feel that way? Well, you can be anything you want. There's 517 genders to choose from on Facebook. Have your pick. That, my friends, is 100% irrational. Or, as my grandpa would say, that's just plumb crazy.
Well, thank you, Pastor, for walking us through the application and applicability of math in the world and how that can be a proof of God and what we're seeing today and how that actually is showing us that when you start denying God, you start rolling out of control. So I appreciate you connecting the dots for us. I appreciate you guys joining us again here on the Salty Pastor Podcast. Make sure you tune in on Sunday as Pastor Doug kind of wraps this whole focus on math up, and then we'll have another proof for you next week here on Tuesday here on the Salty Pastor Podcast. We'll see you then.
All right. Always think for yourself.